Welcome to the Pop Culture Palace Presents podcast, the official show for the Pop Culture Palace website. Every other week on this feed, you'll find an episode from a rotating group of shows. This week, we bring you Pop Culture Palace Presents Episode 12, Comic Book Ages Part 5, The Modern Age Part 1. Welcome to the Pop Culture Palace Presents. I'm your host, Al Sedano. In this episode, we are continuing our series on the different comic book ages. This episode is the first of two episodes containing our discussion of, well, depends on who you ask. The Modern Age, the Copper Age, Late Bronze Age. Now, in case you have forgotten, or for some reason just jumping onto this episode and skipping the first four parts, my co-hosts are W. Blaine Dowler, Brian Zeno, and John M. Wilson. Links to Blaine's Bureau 42 podcast network, John's Midgar's Marvel podcast, Brian's Old Sergeant Fury show, as well as the first four parts of this series, can be found in the show notes. Brian currently does not have his own show, but he and John are my regular rotating co-hosts on my other show, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast. And that's enough of an introduction. We're going to play a promo and then get on with the conversation.
My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and Beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air. Eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
All right, so this is when it starts to get nebulous now, because usually it says after that is the modern age, but I don't really think personally that it's all been just one age since then. There's definitely been, I think, at least two distinct ages, maybe, or more, since the end of the Bronze Age. So let's go back to Blaine. What do you say happens after the Bronze Age?
Yeah, I'll use the label the Modern Age, because that's the one in the vernacular. Again, marked by another relaxation of the Comics Code authority in about the mid-1980s with your Watchmen and your Dark Knight Returns and that push. And going well into the 90s, where you had the advent of digital coloring through Malibu Comics, they found a way to cheaply and quickly reproduce way more colors to give the artists far more flexibility. And then I would say that that age continues through the bankruptcy of Marvel and the rebirth of the industry, where, you know, that whole problem they had in the 90s where basically they had convinced a significant portion of the buying market that comics were investments rather than pieces of entertainment, which broke the economic models for retailers, publishers, and readers in a way that the industry almost didn't recover from. And then I would sort of mark the end of that with the recovery from that bankruptcy chapter, Avia Arad taking over. And right around the year 2000, when now Joe Quesada's editor-in-chief in Marvel, and we're starting to see more than just Batman and Superman make it to the movie theaters with, you know, Blade, X-Men, Spider-Man coming out and all performing above expectations one after the other. You know, Blade not making quite as much money as the other two, but making way more than any industry analyst predicted it would make. And I think that that started a new age of comics, but in terms of, yeah, I mean, we can get into that as another later age, but I think that's the point where we can clearly say, yes, that was one era of comics. And I think it may still be too close to it to really look back with the proper view and perspective from history to say, yeah, that other age that would have started around 2000 and 2002, where does that really end? And, you know, what is going to replace it to define the next chapter? That's something I don't know I could put a definition on yet.
Brian?
Well, the rest of the story, as it were, for me, is going to be clearly be influenced, and I'll just tell you this up front, by the fact, I mean, I'm a lifelong Marvel zombie. And I have, over the last few years, I have been with great relish and enjoyment, vastly increasing my knowledge of DC and other stuff as well. But for the most part, I mean, I started reading comics on my own dime in 1985 at the age of 13. And since then, like right up until this day, like Marvel still is something of a default for me. And I just tell you this story by way of saying that what I'm about to say as my conception of post-Bronze Age history is very much colored by that Marvel default. So please excuse that and take it with a grain of salt and all that good stuff. But for me, I conceive of it as something that I alternately call the Late Bronze Age or the Claremont Age. Because you've starting with Giant Size X-Men number one in 1975, which, yes, I know technically Claremont wasn't actually involved with. That was Len Wein. But the point is, those X-Men and then the Claremont dominance of that right through him leaving X-Men in 1991. And the various other things that happened under there, like, for instance, the Frank Miller run on Daredevil, or the various Secret Wars or Crisis on Infinite Earths or Marvel's New Universe, all of these various experiments and developments and incremental moves in different directions, those all happened in a sort of same, like, that still feels like one period to me. And so since that coincides with the start and end of Claremont's run on the X-Men, I sort of think of it as the Claremont Age, or you could call it a Late Bronze Age. And then you've got the 90s with all the Pouches and the Jim Lees and the Rob Liefelds and blah blah blah. And
you kids and your Jim Lees.
Right, yeah, you know. And then as Blaine pointed out, and I think it's a very astute observation, it is a real point of demarcation and watershed moment when Bill Gemmis bought Marvel and took it out from the bankruptcy horror that it had been going through for so many years at that point. And Joe Quesada took over as editor-in-chief, and all of a sudden you've got the Marvel Knights stuff. You've got Brian Bendis's run on Daredevil. You've got J. Michael Straczynski's run on Spider-Man. You've got all the like this amazing stuff that's happened still then and that is still happening that, to my mind, amounts to what is a new true golden age of comic book storytelling, and it's just as good over on the DC side and on and at Image and in all these other publishers as well. So much good stuff happening since 2000, basically. So those three broad strokes are pretty much how I conceive of the comics age post Bronze Age.
Oh, and Brian, real quick also, just piggybacking what you both said, 2000 is also when the X-Men movie came out, which is definitely, I mean, Blade was the first one, but for the most part, most people thought it was just a vampire hunting movie. No one's really going to think that's a comic movie, but when you get X-Men coming out, that's definitely a movie based on a comic book for anyone who has no idea of comics.
Right,
and that's
right.
Also 2000, same year.
Yeah, it was a moment. It's a real moment where you can see a break between what came before and what came after.
All right, John.
You know, it's interesting because we started out this discussion, and I really thought we were all going to come together on the beginning of the Golden Age, and we didn't. We had like widely varying opinions on what constitutes the beginning of the Golden Age, and I really thought I was going to have an unusual and totally different understanding of how the Bronze Age went away and the comics industry moved on. And here I am just echoing my friends. You know, we link the Golden Age to the 40s, we link the Silver Age to the 60s. The Bronze Age started in the 70s, but it continued to grow and flourish and take its ideas that it did in the 70s and refine them and do more of them and better with them in the 80s. So that the 80s was still a Bronze Age, like Brian said, maybe a late Bronze Age, but it's still doing the same kinds of stuff, just better. And, you know, the monsters and supernatural and horror that was allowed to flourish in the 70s was brought to a fine art in the 80s with the Swamp Thing comics and the Sandman comics, the Hellblazer comics. You had the British Invasion bring a lot of those sensibilities into the U.S. And what you did start to have happening, though, in the mid-80s was the idea of comics as collector's items and crossover events where you had to get issues. It's no longer, I'm going to go get the next X-Men because I want to read X-Men. It's I think I need to get these other comics, too. That's weird. So to my mind, some of those elements, also in the art styles, a push of artists being as important to the story as writers, which had been a thing in Marvel since at least as far back as the 60s, because the quote-unquote Marvel method was that the artist would tell the story. Well, now the artist's names are becoming more important than the writer's names in some cases, especially mm-hmm. in the planning offices, especially in the X-Men offices. Mm-hmm. So in sexualization of art is another thing that rose during the 80s. You know, you have Frank Springer with Dazzler. You know, you have depiction of females in costumes. Have you ever seen a woman in spandex? It does not hug every curve, except for the ones that jut out the most. It does not curve around every nook and cranny of the body the way the superhero comics started to do as you move towards the end of the 1980s. So, to me, a lot of those elements happening in the mid to late 80s set the stage for what I consider the fourth age of comics, which is the 1990s. The launches of all these new other companies like Malibu, Valiant, and especially Image. The departure of several big artists because they were big artists. Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson, Rob Liefeld, Mark Silvestri, other people. No, Sylvester didn't lead Marvel. But all the people who came over to start Image, and the idea of Flash over substance. Mm-hmm. That if we could just make the comic look cool. And, you know, the rule of cool definitely stands for something in entertainment, especially in comic books. But it's not the only rule you can stand on. And there was an era there where that was very much what was going on. And that's why the 90s tend to get a bit bad rap, because there was a lot going on there that was new and different and energetic, but people started to see through the illusion. At the same time, you have other really good stuff going on. But some of that really good stuff also characterizes the 90s, that we started killing our heroes. The death of Superman, unlike many people believe, is not this big marketing gimmick that was supposed to be hugely publicized. It almost slipped under the radar until a few months before Superman 75 came out. Somebody saw the preview for it in a comic store and leaked it to the media. So a very small amount of time before Superman 75 came out, the media found out he was going to die, and they blew it up. And Batman was already in the throes of his Nightfall storyline, whenever that was going on, and so his back gets broken. They did it to Green Lantern. They did it to all these other characters. So the 1990s, there was a lot going on that was new and that was different in a variety of ways, and the digital coloring helped bring it all to vibrant life. So that's, to me, the big next age of comics after the Bronze Age. I hear a lot of people draw a line at Crisis and Infinite Earths. To me, that is a plot difference. That's a continuity difference. That's not an age of the comics industry boundary line. And then after the 90s, I think the rise of superhero cinema cannot be ignored. It's possible that we might be able to call the 2000 to 2008 stretch as being similar to the 1956 to 1961 stretch, as being like where this new era we're in is taking form.
Like a transition era.
Like a transition era from X-Men and Spider-Man getting their launches, the superhero cinema industry, people realizing this is not something that we have to laugh at or something we have to like sort of wink and nod at, but something we can actually take really seriously besides just Batman. And even Batman was only taken seriously in one of his four movies. So the idea we could enjoy superhero comics as actual entertaining adult fiction that's also suitable for kids, more or less. And that culminates in, I think, the launch of Marvel Studios and the launch of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which brings us to the age we're in right now. Things I like about where the comic industry is that I think characterize a current age, I think the superhero cinema outshining the superhero comics, I think superhero comics also being outshone by creator-owned comics. Maybe not in the numbers and the sales charts, but certainly in the critical reception. I think a return and a resurgence of readership that is not white straight male, mostly the male part, but also just like there's a greater diversity. There are a lot more women reading comics now than there were 20 years ago. And that's great. There's a push for diversity. There's a push for creator-owned comics. And your fights and tights is a staple of the industry, sure, but it's not really the leader of the industry, at least from a critical perception anymore. I think I've rambled about seven different directions, so I'm just going to stop there.
If I could real quick, it's just because we do keep bringing up, you know, these demarcating lines. And I agree with you, John, that the Crisis on Infinite Earths isn't really the demarcating line that a lot of people think it is. But then I'm not sure you want to listen to me about any of this, because I was just thinking about something that is. And I think I may be alone in this for some reason. Again, as I mentioned, my first time reading comics under my own steam was in the mid 80s. And I remember in 87 when John Byrne left the Fantastic Four. And right around that time, I think we also had the Fall of the Mutants around that time. And right around that time, something's changed in the Spider-Man. I think DeFalco Friends era ended or something. Anyway, my point is, but right around the time that those Marvel 25th anniversary special corner box logos were all the rage, as soon as those ended, nothing ever seemed the same to me in comics again. And I drifted away from them for a while because they just seemed like something had changed and I wasn't enjoying them as much anymore. And I may be the only person to think that the end of the Marvel 25th anniversary logo and John Byrne's run on Fantastic Four was some sort of major historical milestone. But I just wanted to throw that out there as a really weird example of how we think about these things.
Well, it's at least a personal milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for when I look at books, especially when they start getting to the 80s, it definitely, now, you can call it either late Bronze Age, or if you want to keep going with the metal thing and go to the Copper Age, it definitely does feel to me like it's something different than the Bronze Age books. Plus, for me, in that early 80s, especially like 81, 82, it definitely seems to me like it's a new, at least either a secondary era or a brand new era, because you have a couple things happening, not just in the stories themselves, but you have the independent books. I mean, there always were some independent books beforehand, but for the most part, they were hard to find, or these were like the Robert Crumb books and, you know, the Freak Brothers that were sold in head shops. But now you have like Pacific Comics, Kamiko, First Comics, you know Matt Wagner's Grendel and Mage, and these other, well, Cerebus was in the late 70s, but still that was going on. But like, you have this rise of these independent books, and that's also because of the rise, even though they had started before, but the real rise in the 80s of comic book shops, of the direct market. And that definitely was a big change for comics. So to me, like, starting getting into the early 80s is definitely a different, makes it a new era, because that changed everything. Because now you started getting these books now, instead of being on newsstands, they were starting to go more towards now direct market. Plus, you kind of have a rise of what I felt was like comic journalism. I mean, again, you always have something that started earlier. Comic Buyer's Guide was in the 70s. But you had all these comic magazines about comics in the 80s. You had Amazing Heroes, Comic Scene, Letter of Comment, and these were all things where you could find out what was going to be happening.
Comic Buyer's Guide, that was my favorite.
So, like, you, to me, that 80s is a different, like I said, it can still be called a late Bronze Age, but it's definitely not the same as the Bronze Age proper to me. That's definitely a difference. The 90s, starting, I start with basically saying more or less Spider-Man 1, the Todd McFarlane one. You have, and I like this name because I've seen some, a couple of people use it, and I find it fun, the Chromium Age, which basically is the bulk of the 90s, where you have the comic book, you know, the boom.
And, I love that.
Yeah, you have the boom and bust of the speculator market. You have all these artists not just becoming popular, but superstars. I mean, Rob Liefeld had his 501 Jeans commercial on TV.
So how long have you been drawing comic books?
Since I was about 7 years old, little kid.
What'd your parents think about it?
They hate it. They hate it.
Oh, yeah.
After I got a job and they saw that you can make a living out of third, they, you'll hear no complaints anymore.
And you created X-Force?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the drawing on?
This is the Spike Man.
And what's this right here?
This is the camera on top of your head that will record the wrongdoings of others.
So, Rob, have you had any formal art training?
No. Just a lot of imagination, I think. Wait till so I say it and then look down. Or just open it and say it.
Fly button?
You have all the fun with the all the fun they did with the covers, with die cut diamonds on the front. We're gonna put blood on there. There's a bullet hole in Protectors number 5 from Malibu, and all the independents were getting into it too. Not just with the covers, but all the fact that before you had these independent books, like I said, starting out, you know, like Turtles, for instance, in the 80s. But now they're all were doing their own universes. You know, Ultraverse, the Chaos had their own universe. Valiant had a universe. CrossGen was starting in that time period.
I loved CrossGen.
Or maybe they started I think they started 2000s. So it'd be a little bit after that. But
yeah.
But I mean, for them, you know.
Yeah, they were 2000s.
Yeah, because I've been starting to reread my early CrossGen, so that's right. Duh, I would know that. But so that's like a different age. And then once you start getting basically to 2000, that's why I start considering the modern era. For many reasons, like you said, John, you have, you know, not just the movies bringing this up to a public consciousness and becoming more important, unfortunately, than the comics, but bringing more, you know, much more focus on diversity, but also social media and its effect on comics and the way they're created. Not saying right or wrong, I'm not trying to take a side on this, but look what happened with that Batgirl cover from a couple years ago with the Joker there. I mean, you would not have had the, you know, that would not have been pulled for the reason it was pulled in 1985. But you have the social media, and that definitely has a huge effect now. So I was, like I said, from 2000 on, I consider that the modern age, because really, the last 20 years or so, it's kind of hard, you know, until you get past that a bit, it's hard to say what was the age until you're at least, I think, 20 to 30 years past it. Yeah. And then you go, that was an age.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doug who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
It's time again to acknowledge and thank the people who have liked and shared our episodes on social media. Specifically, we are talking about episode 11, which was our Bronze Age episode, on Twitter. That episode was retweeted and liked by Line Link, Itaconies Virginia, Heroes Garage, Karok Big E Podcast, Justin the Buck, Films Remembered Badly, WBG Plus, Sleepy Reader, Food Scientist Pod, Out of Eden Podcast, The Deuce Podcast, and Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show. On Facebook, the episode was liked and shared by John M. Wilson, Paul Spataro, Pat Sampson, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Mike Peacock, Martin Gray, Joe Sedano, Alan Middleton, and Justin Lesniak. In preparing for this episode, I went on Facebook and asked a couple of other podcasters what they thought about this era. What did they think came after the Bronze Age? Or where did they think the Bronze Age ended and the next era began? And I did get a couple of responses. So first of all, we have Derek William Crabb from the Fanholds podcast. He says, the Event Age, the Deconstructionist Age, the Grim and Gritty Age. We've run out of medals at this point. I suppose conventional wisdom would point to 1980 ending the Bronze Age of comics, and most of the defining comics of that era would hit around 1984 to 1986. I suppose someone like Alex Ross would point to Flash 275 or 283 as the cutoff point. Others might point to the night Gwen Stacy died. As far as comics that certainly belong to and define the post-Bronze Age, Wolverine and Punisher's first limited series, Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, Crisis on Infinite Earths, and Secret Wars. I look at titles like The Incredible Hulk, which I might suggest entered the post-Bronze Age once Bill Mantlo started writing the title. Uncanny X-Men, right around the time John Byrne comes aboard as the penciler. Every DC book post-Crisis or post-1985 is assuredly post-Bronze Age, but the line between Silver to Bronze and Bronze to Post gets pretty muddled with DC titles until post-Crisis era. Green Lantern 123, December 1979, is probably a good mark for the post-Bronze Age for me. So basically, yeah, he's saying he's not really sure what to call it. A couple different things. I guess he doesn't want to go with metals anymore. Like I said earlier, I like copper. But he does kind of agree with me that 1980 is more or less the end of the Bronze Age. Because he's saying a lot of the 80s books are obviously a little different than the Bronze Age books. So we kind of agree on that. He does give some examples from some other people thinking the night Gwen Stacy died. Although that's Amazing Spider-Man 121, that's early 70s. I don't think the Bronze Age ended in 1972. I think that's what it was, 73. And Flash 275 would be the death of Iris Allen, but that again is, I think, mid-70s. So I will go with him. Well, actually, I do go with him, like I said earlier. 1980 is the end of the Bronze Age. We also heard from Paul Spataro of the Is It Jaws and Back to the Bins podcast. He actually had a little bit of a back and forth with Derek. Paul said he views the Bronze Age as ending with Crisis, but he likes Derek's suggestion of the Grim and Gritty Age. He also suggested the Age of the Speculators. Derek responded, saying that Paul's post got him thinking, and asked if he thought of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing as Bronze Age. He personally never thought of the Anatomy Lesson, which is the first issue of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, as a Bronze Age comic. And he's curious, for example, how Paul would quantify the various ages using, say, Uncanny X-Men. And Paul's response to that is that he says the problem is that it's kind of a sliding scale. There is no definitive demarcation, but Crisis seems to be the clearest thing to point to. There really isn't a clear marker between the Silver and Bronze Ages, as DC kind of dragged their feet on that one. The Moore books would seem to belong post-Bronze Age to me, me being Paul. This goes with something I had said earlier, in that I thought there really was no definitive line marking the end of one age and the beginning of another. It was more of a, I called it a tipping point, when it went more into the new age than the old age. At least for me, that's how I quantified as, overall, this is when the new age started and the old age ended. Which is more or less what Paul said as well. And we do have a couple other people who responded, and since this is going to be a two-parter on the quote-unquote modern age, we're going to include those ones next episode. So if you are one of the people who responded to my post asking about it, don't worry. We will hear from you next time. If you have any thoughts on the end of the Bronze Age or what comes after, please let us know. Talk to us on Twitter at the PC Palace. Comment on the post for this episode on our Facebook page. Just type Pop Culture Palace in the search box. You can, of course, go to our website, thepopculturepalace.com, and leave a comment there. And as always, there is email, thepalaceofpopculture@gmail.com. I'd also like to ask that if you are enjoying the show, to leave us an iTunes review. We don't have any yet, and it would be cool if you left our first. Yes, you. I'm talking to you. You know who you are. That's it for this episode. We'll be back soon with part two of The Modern Age. See you then. Music for this podcast was Going Higher, provided by royalty-free music from bensound.com.
Okay.
Oh, and before we get started on that, I don't think this has been done. I don't think this is done before, so just in case, Brian, Blaine. Blaine, Brian.
Hi.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Blaine.
Blaine likes to podcast with video. He also likes to podcast with all of his clothes on. He's a strange person, but I appreciate that both of those go together.
Yes. Or at least the clothes from here up.
Yes.
From right.
Here
we
down? Yes. Totally
we had
optional.
The catheter discussion earlier.
That's true. That's the magic, what we call the magic of television, or what we used to call the magic of television. You don't really know, do you?
Right. Yeah, you just have to plan like Hitchcock did when they were filming Torn Curtain, and Paul Newman got to set and apologized because he wore the shoes for his character home the night before and forgot to wear them back to the set. He's like, I really don't want to delay production. I can run home and grab them. I can be back in 20 minutes. And Hitchcock said, that's okay. The shots we're filming today, we're not going to see more than 2/3 of the way between the third and fourth button of your shirt.
So, who cares?
All right. Well, that's good.
Yeah, most people know that, yeah, you're not only going to see from the waist up, but Hitchcock was the director who said, it's going to be 2/3 of the way between the third and fourth buttons of that shirt. And he was just, okay.
So, just a little
It will precise. Be between the buttons of your shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably sounded more like that.
Yes.
Probably.
And I heard the FDR just never wore pants.
Hmm.
I got the blanket.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, apparently he very much liked miniskirts.
He and Laura Linares had that in common. No pants, lots of blanket.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would
And Xavier.
I was going
to
say.
That seems to be like.
Sorry, go on.
That just seems to be like the wheelchair fashion in the days, because seeing these. These smaller legs do lack of exercise, just freak people out, so they hid them. I don't know.
Lalandra likes it when Xavier goes blanket only.
Yeah. That'll explain some of the creepiest things that they've retroactively put in for the original X-Men. Yeah. Professor, could you please put on pants? No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
We're going to send our teenagers to a school far away where there are only 5 students and the one professor has no pants and lusts after the teenage girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the school I want to go to, kids.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, as soon as you even think about how wrong that is, you're okay with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It would explain why why they only had the 5 of
this
them.
I have this vague notion that something bothered me, but damned if I can remember what it is.
That's why they had the 5 students for the longest time. Everyone's like, no, we're good. We're good.
Let's no, we we're are. Good. Yeah.
We're Sentinels, we're cool to Sentinels. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I do, however, just to advocate for the devil for a brief moment, I do maintain the position that whatever strange, crazy, disturbing thoughts Xavier had in his head, at least he never spoke them out loud.
Yeah.
And also, whatever strange shenanigans he got up to up there, were still plenty vanilla by the standards of the rival Massachusetts Academy.
Yes, at least he didn't walk around in lingerie. Well, he walked around in no pants. So there's, he didn't walk around at all. What am I saying?
Yes, she walked around in no pants.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
There are different rules for males and females, as I'm sure we'll get into.
Mm-hmm.